Hello and welcome to another episode of the NBCSports.com College Basketball Talk Podcast. It is Monday, January 14th. My name is Rob Doster. I have a fun conversation on the way for you today. I was able to catch up with my buddy from Fox Sports Radio and the Aaron Torres Sports Podcast. You guessed it, his name is Aaron Torres. We talked about everything that happened in college basketball this weekend, from Louisville beating up on North Carolina in the Dean Dome, to Zion Williamson getting double vision and Cam Reddish banging home a three to beat Florida State, to Gonzaga winning on the road, to Tennessee Gator chomping all over Florida, to Ole Miss coming out of nowhere to look like a top 15 basketball team. We get into all of that. But before I do, I got to make the usual ask. Please rate, please review, please subscribe to this podcast and any app that you listen to podcasts in. Because all of those interactions, whether it's downloading, whether it's subscribing, whether it's rating, whether it's reviewing, they all help. They help us in the metrics. They help us in the rankings. And when you help me, it makes my bosses happy. When my bosses are happy, I'm happy. When I'm happy, you are getting a better podcast. So rating and reviewing and giving me 5 stars and saying nice things about me is only going to make your day better. So I thank you for that help. And now let's get into that conversation with Aaron Torres. And now let me welcome on to the podcast a Fox Sports Radio host and the host of the Aaron Torres Sports Podcast. If you can't figure it out by now, this is Aaron Torres. Aaron, what's going on, my man? How you doing?
Rob, I'm doing good, man. It is Monday. I know we're going to overreact, but I love looking back on the weekend, kind of figuring out what did we learn? Did we learn anything? It's actually like weirdly one of my favorite weeks, favorite days of the week, just in terms of like trying to figure out everything that happened the last couple days. And so no better way to spend my Monday than hanging out with you, my man.
Yeah. So how's everything going, man? Weekend good? We haven't talked in a while.
Yeah, everything's good. Staying busy. You know, I was flipping channels and, you know, I flipped on a little LaSalle because, you know, and you never miss a LaSalle game. And my boy Rob Doster was on TV, man. I was happy to see you out there. I don't know how it went. I don't know if you shared the audience. Was it good? Was it bad? But it was great seeing you on there, man, and good to see all your hard work paying off. And I know how much you bust your ass, especially this time of year. So was happy to see you on my TV, and I hope it went well.
It did. And for people that don't know, I did I thought I was going to do a sideline for an NBCSN game between St. Louis and LaSalle. And there was an audible at the last second, and we ended up doing a three-man booth. So it was me, Terry Gannon, who, I don't know if you know this, but he was actually a member of
NC State?
Yeah, NC State guy, 1983 title team, Jim Valvano. So I did not realize that, but I know that now. And former Cal and Rice head coach Ben Braun. And it was fun, man. Those two are really, really good at what they do, and they made it very easy for me to kind of seamlessly slide in there and tell some stories and drop a little bit of knowledge. And it was fun. I had a good time doing it. But so how about this? And you let me know if I made a mistake here. This is what I was talking to when we were texting, talking about when I was texting with you earlier. So I went and I got my suits tailored for this, right? I've never gotten a suit tailored. So I went, I got my suits tailored and I went in there and I got measured like early December, right? And I took it to the guy and I was just like, look, you don't need to rush it. Take your time with it. I don't need these until about mid-January. So, and in the days after I took the suits to the tailor, I was talking with a couple of buddies and one of the guys that I went to college with, he needs to lose some LBs. He's 6'6", but he's like 325. He puts on weight really quickly. So we decided we were going to do like this weight loss prop bet challenge. Whoever loses the most weight from January 1st to July 1st ends up, I don't know what we're going to actually do yet, but they win the bet basically. Whoever loses the highest percentage of their weight starting on January 1st. So I'm thinking in my head, like, how can I get an edge here? How can I win this? This bet. And what I decided to do was I just completely faded the gym for 3 weeks at the end of December and just ate as much as possible because I figured if I get those LBs up, then that's going to be the easiest stuff to lose. I'm going to have a higher percentage. And like, that's going to be my ticket to winning the bet. Cause this other guy is like 325 pounds, you know, he's going to have some easy weight to lose. So I figured I needed to put on some easy weight to lose without really thinking that I had just gone and, you know, gotten my suits tailored for what I was before. Before I made this bet. So I put them on. They were a little bit snug. I didn't pop any buttons or anything, but it was, when I went to go put them on the first time, I was a little bit nervous. And And yeah, so it ended up working out. But like, I think I might have just played that wrong because like I didn't actually put on much weight. I just feel like blubbery now.
Yeah, I'm about winning a bet as much as the next guy, but when it just means like giving up all self-respect and, you know, just trying to be a slob, like, you know, I don't know. I'm not saying you should or you shouldn't. It's ironic that you bring that up because I'm getting married July 4th weekend and my fiance and I are on kind of a pseudo similar trajectory as you. And I don't know that we're like competing or anything, but I feel your pain, but I don't think the way that I would go about winning that bet would be to actively try to gain weight and just be a slob. But hey, that's just me, you know, different strokes for different folks. And, you know, I bet the holidays were fun. I guess you have that going for you. I bet you had a fun few weeks to end 2018, if I would guess correctly.
Yeah, I ate a lot of really good food and way too much of it and drank a lot of really good beer and way too much of it without a second thought. And yeah, you know, if I could have it back, I probably would do it a little bit differently.
Part was the problem. Yeah.
Yes.
Without a second thought part was the problem.
But. Yes. Yes. Well, the big thing was I shouldn't have stopped going to the gym. Should have just kept going to the gym, but I don't know. We all have regrets in life and this is probably going to end up being one of mine. You know what might be a regret for Roy Williams? Not guarding the 3-point line when Louisville came to town. For me, in the games, you like that segue, by the way, Mr. Radio Host? That was pretty good, right?
Yeah, it was like a B plus. Yeah, I mean, you know, whatever. I mean, you know, you're getting back on your stuff. You know, it's a new year, and you know, you're working on your transitions, you're working on your buys and your tries. You got a lot going on right now. It was pretty good, though. It was solid.
I do. All right. Well, if you say it was good, then I believe it was good. So let's talk about that North Carolina Louisville game. I think that it says more about Louisville than it does about North Carolina. I'm curious where you stand. For those that don't know, Louisville went into the Dean Dome after losing to Pitt as a 12-point underdog and ended up beating North Carolina. I think the final score was 83-62. So they turned a 12-point – they were getting 12 points, and they ended up winning by 21. That's a 33-point difference. That's a pretty big spread based on what Vegas projects.
It's really funny. So you mentioned that, you know, I do a podcast a couple times a week usually, the Aaron Torres Sports Podcast, and – this is actually what I led my show with. I have a buddy who comes on from time to time. He hosts a radio show in Louisville, and, you know, he knows the Cards really well. We led with this. And so, you know, I we'll get back to Louisville in a second. I think to me, I feel like it kind of says more about North Carolina. I really do. And I was thinking, you know, weirdly, which is going to sound really weird me saying this, I was thinking about you because – you've been kind of at the forefront of the whole Nasir Little conversation and lineups and how do all the pieces fit together. And as I was watching North Carolina on Saturday, I was like, you know, I like all of their pieces individually, but I don't really know how they all fit together. And like Kobe White's awesome, but he turns the ball over a lot. And Luke May is awesome, but he's kind of limited in what he can do. And Nasir Little, as you've documented time and time again, they're still trying to figure out what he is and where does he fit and what lineups work with him. And so as I watch that game and then as I really kind of peel back their season and like you look at, you know, their best – first of all, they got smoked by Michigan. They lose to Kentucky on a neutral. They now take a home loss to Louisville. They lose to Texas, which doesn't look very good right now. And so the point I'm trying to make is their losses, in theory, probably except for Michigan, probably don't even look as good now as they did when they happened. Their best wins look worse. UCLA, Gonzaga. I am sold that was more about Gonzaga having traveled like literally 10,000 miles in the three weeks before that game than it was about North Carolina breaking through. And so I think Saturday was the culmination of me being like, are we sure North Carolina is really that good? And to me, I do think it was about North Carolina.
So what I will say about North Carolina is this. I kind of look at them and have been looking at them since the Kentucky game as a team that is, they're just always going to be up and down because for starters, they have a freshman point guard and freshman point guards, as it stands, are never going to be all that consistent, right? It's just kind of what happens when you're a freshman and you're a point guard. And then you throw in the fact that it's North Carolina running a system that is heavily reliant on that point guard being able to do the things that you know, Joel Berry did, or that Raymond Felton did, or that Ty Lawson did. Like, point guards for Roy Williams are very, very important to what they do. So that alone is going to make them a little bit of an up-and-down team. Two, Coby White is just streaky in general. You know, he's a guy that can get you 33 on one night, and on another night he could end up getting you, you know, on Saturday he had 4 points, four turnovers, and three fouls, right? It wasn't a great game for him. And then the other part of it is that they are a team, they want to play two bigs. You know, I don't think Roy Williams was ever happier than when he was able to go to a national title and win the national title starting Kennedy Meeks next to Isaiah Hicks. He wants those two big guys. And as it stands, he doesn't have a team that can play those two big guys, right? So that's a problem for him as well. They're never going to be able to have the five that is perfect for what Roy Williams wants to do. And then the bigger issue, I think, at least in what's going on with Luke May, you know, he was a guy deservedly an All-American last year, was a preseason All-American this year, and, you know, he just has not been up to that level, is that he relied a lot on people being able to create for him, right? Like, he's not a guy, you can't just give the ball to him and say, okay, go get a bucket against anybody. He's somebody that you kind of have to put in certain situations and somebody that is a little bit of reliant on some people creating for him, like a catch and shoot kind of guy. And I think that with Coby White is not necessarily a creator. He's more of a scorer. So if he's not, if it's one of the nights where he's cold and no, people can kind of not worry about him as much, focus their attention on Luke May, you don't have somebody that's going to be able to create those easy shots for Luke May. And I think when you put it all together, it kind of makes them be this team that has, can have really high highs when a Coby White or a Nazir Little or a Luke May or a Cam Johnson gets it going. They can have really low lows when they don't have their best games. That's why you see wins like the one against Gonzaga, where I thought they played really well. The win at North Carolina State. I'm still in on North Carolina State being like a top 20 team. And they went in there and they won a game where they basically controlled the game for all 40 minutes. So I guess my thinking was that, yes, it's surprising they lose by 20 at home, but it's not surprising that we see a floor game right after a ceiling game from North Carolina. Does that make sense?
No, it actually makes perfect sense. I mean, I still think it plays a little bit. I think, you know, kind of your thesis plays into my theory that the pieces are really good, but they don't necessarily fit together. And, you know, I do think there's something to the floor ceiling stuff. And I probably should reference that North Carolina State game because I actually really like NC State as well. I guess the only thing I would say about that game is that, like, NC State likes to play really fast like Carolina does. I think that it created kind of opportunities in transition and the fast breaks and stuff like that, which allowed Carolina to get some easy baskets. And, like, weirdly, even though NC State plays this really unique style and they really kind of want to get you playing faster than you're comfortable playing, I don't think it really affects North Carolina. So the only reason I bring that up is because I do wonder if that was kind of like the ideal matchup for them. And in some ways, Gonzaga plays, you know, really fast as well. So I agree with what you said. And I think, like, there's some valid points. I guess now that I think about it, a pair of wins against Gonzaga and at NC State aren't a very bad jumping off point for the middle of, for the middle of January here, as we get into the heart of conference play and you still haven't played Duke, Virginia, et cetera. But yeah, no, I don't know, man. I think we're both kind of saying the same thing. I think that you have more conviction that they can turn it around, or that at least maybe they can get matchups ideal to them when it counts. To me, I just see a bunch of dudes that are, like, really individually talented and, like, sort of a knock on them, like, oh, they don't like playing with each other. Like, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying the pieces don't kind of naturally fit together.
Yeah, I'm with you. I hear what you're saying. And it's the other part of it is what you were getting at is that the pieces don't necessarily fit with what Roy Williams wants to do either. Yes. It's just, it's a weird roster makeup. And I don't think Roy has quite found he hasn't figured out the answer to the puzzle quite yet. Any takes on Louisville before we move on?
You know, I was never as down on Louisville as everybody else. You know, kind of just the way I looked at it was, for the most part, they were either going to have guys that were like top 50, top 60 recruits, or, you know, the guys that we all know, Jordan Nora, you know, whoever's on the roster. Can't, you know, I'm blanking on names here. Or
Dwayne,
they were going to have
Steve Enoch, Kristen, you should know Steve Enoch.
Oh yeah, no, and I was going to say, or they were transfers. Oh, that's my guy. I love Steve Enoch. So he, but like, or they were transfers that have either played at a high level or produced at a high level, like Christian Cunningham. So I was never as low on them as some people. But I will say, after the Kentucky game, I just kind of realized that, like, maybe I kind of oversold in my head how good those pieces could be. So I'm kind of in, like, this weird place with Louisville where, like, I'd like to take a victory lap and say, hey, I totally saw this coming because I liked them in the preseason. But I kind of flipped on, you know, how I actually feel on them about 2 or 3 weeks ago. And so, look, I think it's a great win. And I think the bottom line is, like, it's early, but I think everyone that's a Louisville fan would be thrilled if in this season, with all the turmoil of the last couple of years, they can get to the tournament. And I think when you're starting a resume with a home win against Michigan State and a road win against UNC, that to me feels like it's going to be a tournament caliber resume once they get to March. And I think for Louisville fans, that's realistically what they were hoping for in the preseason and what they're going to get when it matters most.
Yeah, I think that take is pretty much spot on. You know, they have this is not the kind of talent that we're typically going to see with Chris Mack coaching that program. He's going to upgrade the talent, but they have guys that are good enough, that are going to play hard enough. And Chris Mack is, you know, I don't think it's crazy to say he's a top 10 coach in college basketball. So it's not surprising to see him be able to win some games. And to your point with the NCAA tournament, as long as they don't do anything stupid, like lose 9 of their next 13, or something like that, I think that they're going to, if they get to 9-9 in the ACC with a win at North Carolina, a win at Seton Hall, a win over Michigan State, and a win over Lipscomb, who is going to end up being pretty good in all of these computer rankings, I think that they're going to the tournament, as long as they don't do anything dumb. Get to 9-9 in league play, and you're getting to the dance.
Yeah, I think weirdly, and it sounds stupid to say that games in January really matter, but their next two are Boston College at home, Georgia Tech on the road, and it's setting up for them to be 4-1 in the ACC, to start 4-1 in ACC play. And I'll tell you what, man, they better win those games, because the back half of the schedule with all the teams that we all know, you know, a couple games against, against Duke and Clemson and, you know.
Two of their last four are against Virginia. Three of their last seven are against Duke and Virginia. Five of their last 10 games are against teams that are top 10 in KenPom. That is brutal.
And that's exactly what I'm saying. So they better win these games, but I think the committee's smart enough to know the value, you know, the caliber of play in the ACC. It's a good spot for Louisville. I know they just lost to Pitt the other night, but like there are wins to be had in the ACC. Like the bottom is pretty bad with Georgia Tech and Wake Forest and Boston College. So beat the teams you're supposed to. Like you said, you win at North Carolina, you're going to get another win or two against those kind of elite caliber teams, be it, you know, whoever, maybe not elite, but Florida State, Virginia Tech, World, you're going to get another win or two against them. Just take care of the teams you're supposed to. You're going to be fine. And like I said, I mean, I think that just considering the turnover in that program, be it coaches, be it losing whatever it was, four starters off of last year's team, and then the fifth starter doesn't even play as much as they thought with BJ King, I think it's been a good, positive year for Louisville. And, you know, not making a joke or tongue-in-cheek or anything here, they just need some, like, positivity in that program, and Chris Mack brought it, so.
I agree with that. You mentioned the issues that North Carolina has with the pieces fitting together. I think that's what we're seeing with Cam Reddish and Duke. On Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock, Duke played a game, and by 3 o'clock, Zion Williamson was out of the lineup. He got poked in the eye. I guess he had double vision, and he did not play in the second half at Florida State. Duke still managed to find a way to win that game. Cam Reddish scored 16 of his 23 points in the second half. He hit the game-winning three. We've all seen the highlight by now. Is this what it takes to kind of get Cam Reddish going? And do you have any, I guess, opinion on why it's taken him a little while to figure out his role on this team?
I mean, I don't think we're figuring out what his role is. I think we know what his role is. He's just the third dude, like, in terms of where the shots are going to go, what the offense is going to do, all that stuff. And so, like, when I watch Duke, I mean, I think he has a role. I just don't think it's necessarily the role that he would ideally envision himself in. And I think part of it is like, look, you know, one, Zion and RJ Barrett are unbelievable talents, but two, like, we can all say it, like, RJ Barrett gets a little ISO heavy a lot of times, especially down the stretch of big games. He did it against Florida State, and it was to Duke's kind of benefit because he made plays, he got to the foul line, all that stuff. But, you know, I think when it comes right back down to it, like, I know that, you know, people tune into a podcast like this for like a more in-depth breakdown than there's only so many shots to go around. But, like, there's only so many shots to go around. And when RJ Barrett is shooting at the volume that he's shooting at, you know, when Zion, who I think, you know, can I say this real quick on Zion? I am so impressed by that kid. Has so many natural gifts, but how hard he plays, how hard he attacks the rim, how hard he defends, how hard he rebounds in the paint. Like, I'm so blown away by what he does, the second chance opportunities that he creates. We get so wrapped up in the dunks. I'm just so impressed how hard this kid plays, because it would be so easy for him to coast off natural ability, to kind of get one or two of those dunks a game, get on SportsCenter, and then call it a day. But he has evolved into such a complete player. And by the way, I do understand why he was frustrated the other day when he said, I'm more than just a dunker. But to get back to the original question.
That's something I want to touch on really quick, because I feel like Duke has not open the doors as much to showcase like what his personality is, because he really is just a really great kid with got a great smile. He's got a great personality. He's going to be somebody that I know Fran Fraschilla loves saying that he's going to be the first $1 billion player, but he really might be the first $1 billion player, because you got all the social media hype built in. He's already got this massive brand. Everybody knows who he is. He gets all the highlights, but he also is a guy that's going to really connect with the American public. He just has one of those personalities that everybody's going to be drawn to. Like I said, a great smile. So I still think that we have more to learn about who he is as a person. And I'm kind of looking forward to seeing when Duke kind of pulls the curtain back on that a little bit. It feels like we don't really know him. Does that make sense?
No, I totally agree. But I also think an element of not just the personality is that he plays really hard, and he plays with an enthusiasm that, like, you realize, like, oh, he's actually like an 18-year-old kid. Okay. And like, we've seen these guys come in, and I'm not comparing any of these guys in terms of talent wise, but whether it's Ben Simmons, whether it's, you know, Markelle Fultz, whoever it is, like guys that either coast on abilities, or you feel like they're not reaching their potential, or they're not playing hard every night. You know, DeAndre Ayton, that was the knock on him at Arizona for a little while, though I think he kind of shook that off by the end of last season. But the reason I bring it up is because, like, it'd be so easy for Zion to be like, man, I only have to be here because, you know, I should be in the NBA right now. You know, pull the Ben Simmons, mopey. Why do I have to come to college? And it's like, he's really, I think, taking advantage of it from, one, really extending the brand. Like, and I always say this, like, it's one thing to have a bunch of Instagram followers and all that stuff, but it's another thing when First Take with Stephen A. Smith or Undisputed with Skip Bayless is leading their show with you. That opens you up to a whole nother, you know, audience that isn't on Instagram, you know, all day long. And so I'm going in a million different directions here, but I think this thing has been awesome to see. I don't want to be like the nerdy guy, but like, I love how he's embracing the college experience. And that, oh, by the way, he isn't saying, hey, in 3 months, I'm going to be a millionaire. I'm never going to have to, you know, I'm never going to have to do anything other than play basketball the rest of my life. He plays his butt off every night. It is so fun to watch. And I'm with you. I wish Duke did a little bit more with him to bring out the fact that this isn't just a phenomenal basketball player, but he's a heck of a person, too.
Yeah. And this is who he kind of reminds me of. And it's not necessarily that he is the same player, and it's not necessarily that he is going to end up being as good as this guy was in the NBA, but it reminds me a little bit of the fit that Anthony Davis had at Kentucky the year that they won the national title. And the reason I say that is because he's not the primary guy offensively, right? Like, that's RJ Barrett. RJ Barrett's going to be the first guy that they go to offensively, that they're looking to ISO, that they're looking to get a shot for. the guy that kind of runs the show for him, the guy that's kind of the glue guy is Trey Jones. Trey Jones. He's the point guard. Yeah. He's the guy that brings the ball up. And Zion is kind of the guy that does like a lot of the dirty work, right? He's going and he's getting to the offensive glass. Like, I think what we really saw in that Florida State game was how much he does to, A, protect the rim against lobs, against backdoors, against all that kind of stuff, and B, how much he really helps them clean that defensive glass. Like, there were a lot of second chance opportunities.
How many offensive rebounds? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I didn't mean to cut you off, but yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of like he is, to me, he is very clearly the most impactful player in college basketball, but he doesn't do it by dominating the ball offensively. He doesn't do it the way that, like, a Marcus Howard does, right? He doesn't do it the way that Carson Edwards does. He doesn't even do it the way that an R.J. Barrett does. But he very clearly dominates games that he's in, and that kind of reminds me a little bit of that Anthony Davis team, and that I think that is why that is certainly why that Kentucky team was so good, because both him and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist were very much aware of the fact that they provided something that wasn't just scoring, and they were happy to do it. And I think that that's what we're seeing out of Zion this year.
And I totally agree. And that's the other thing, too, is, you know, him and R.J. Barrett, it's been well documented, seem to have developed a really close relationship. And, like, obviously being here on the West Coast, I'm not around that team as much as you guys on the East Coast. But, like, for all intents and purposes, it could be, you know, R.J.'s getting too many shots or R.J.'s this. But, like, Zion seems to be, like, and again, it's cliche, but, like, he seems to be about winning. And he doesn't have to be the focal point. He doesn't have to be the guy that gets a certain number of touches. And so I've just been so impressed by it. And it's the little things, like you said, it's the rebounding, it's the effort. And I thought for sure that was the one thing that I was going to bring up that you just hit on, was like, Florida State had like 14 offensive rebounds or something like that, you know, in the game, in like 10 or 11 in the second half. And like, I don't think that I realized just how valuable that he actually is. So we talk about value. We're like, okay, Trey Jones is maybe the most valuable. R.J. Barrett is, you know, has this bright future. And we kind of just like, oh, Zion's like the freak that we all love watching. It's like, no, Zion is like really, really, really important to what they do. And so, yeah, I know we never really answered the Cam Reddish question.
Oh, no, I still have a take that I'll get to on that. But so here's my thing on it. And you could tell me what you think about this. He's kind of a guy, a player that is a little bit naturally inclined to play the background, right? Like, the knock on him ever since he was in high school was that he might play it a little bit too cool, and he might be, there are people that have said like he might be a little bit too cocky. Maybe he's not really a competitor. I don't necessarily think that it's that. I think that it's just he's a little bit more passive in terms of what his personality is, whereas R.J. Barrett is very clearly an alpha, right? Zion Williamson is very clearly an alpha. And I don't think that's necessarily what Cam Reddish is. And that's not, you know, it's not always a knock, but when you have two alphas on your team and you have Trey Jones running the point, it's pretty easy to kind of get, like, lost in translation. And I think part of the reason he's been struggling is that. Part of it is that he doesn't necessarily know where his shots are coming from. Part of it is that he's playing a role. Like, he was, you know, we see him as this like 6'8" wing and versatile defender and a guy that can shoot 40 whatever percent from three. And that's kind of that's all well and good. But he's always been a guy that played like he's always had the ball in his hands. He's always been, if not the point guard, then a lead guard. He's been the guy that they put in ball screens when he was in high school, when he was playing AAU ball. And to be simply a guy playing off the ball is a different role for him. So I think you put all those things together, he doesn't necessarily know where his shots are coming from. He's kind of playing a little bit of a passive role. He's in a little bit of a shooting funk, and I think you've seen his confidence kind of wane, which is why I think that this game was so important for him, because all of a sudden he knew he was going to get these shots. He got the shots. He started knocking them down. And to me, this is the most important thing. Right before he hit the game-winning shot, I think it was two possessions before, he fouled Florida State fouled a three-point shooter, which gave Florida State three free throws. I want to say there were like 2 minutes left in the game when he did that. And then like two possessions later, he turned the ball over. And so that's the kind of thing. Yeah, he stepped out of bounds. And it was like a bad pass, but it was a little bit passive going for it, and he lost the ball out of bounds. And so all of a sudden you're looking at a situation where like a guy who has been in a little bit of a funk, had some confidence issues, made two bad, dumb, whatever you want to call it, plays, still came back, got the open three. One, he had the play called for him. I think that Coach K calling that play for him, and look, everyone's going to say the play was designed for R.J. Barrett to get the ball in the corner. I don't believe that. Yes, that's the first option if Florida State decides not to guard it. But I think that Coach K, what he did, the whole play was designed to get that screen for R.J. Barrett, get him to the corner, engage M.J. Walker, have Bolden roll to the basket, make sure that Kevin Gelle stays with him thinking he's looking for the roll. No, the whole reason he was rolling to the basket was to go set a screen on Trent Forrest, who was the guy that was supposed to go out and challenge R.J. Barrett. I got something up on College Basketball Talk right now breaking down that play and why there were two instances earlier in the game and kind of set the stage for it. But Coach K designed that play to get R.J. Barrett that shot. He got the shot. He knocked it down. And I hope this is what we end up pointing to and saying that was the turning point in the season.
Yeah, no, and I could absolutely conceivably see it. I just do wonder, like, when Zion comes back next game, like, you know, and I guess we're recording here on Monday afternoon. They're playing Monday night. We're going to find out pretty quickly. But I think that Cam Reddish, like, I just think this is who he's going to be. I mean, like I said, 40-minute game with a 30-second shot clock. This isn't the NBA where you can have 3-4 guys and the pace is so fast that they can all get their shots in their minutes. I think all of it plays into what you said about his personality, that, you know, he kind of takes more of a deferential role at times. But I just think this is kind of what his role is going to be. Now, he can be more effective in that role, but I still think when Zion comes back and as we've kind of, you know, beat to death at this point, the volume that R.J. Barrett shoots with, the fact that Trey Jones is the one creating plays, I just think that this is who Cam Reddish is. But I also think he could be really good in that role. Like, if he's your number three or number four guy, depending on what Trey Jones is doing, like, there isn't anybody else in college basketball except, you know, maybe Gonzaga that has a number four guy like R.J. or like Cam Reddish.
Yeah, and honestly, I think it probably means more for Duke on the nights where maybe RJ and Zion aren't shooting well. It gives them a little bit of a cushion in case one of them gets hurt. And frankly, it probably means more for what we can expect from him at the NBA level than anything else, and not so much for how it impacts Duke this year. Let's transition.
Agreed.
I want to talk about your favorite conference in all of sports, the SEC.
Yes.
And before we talk about Ole Miss and this run that they've made and the fact that apparently, like, they're the second best team in the conference, maybe I need to talk to you about the Gator Chomp seen around the world. Tennessee goes into Florida, hard-fought game, chippy game. They end up winning by 11. And afterwards, I think it was Admiral Schofield and Grant Williams and maybe all five of the players on the floor went over and did the Gator Chomp right in front of the Florida fans. I loved it. I think some people hated it. Rick Barnes came out today and said, "I don't like it simply because I want total focus on the main thing. I think when those things happen, it's going to be talked about." And it basically what he said was he didn't want the focus. He wanted the focus on the win and on the team, not on the fact that they did a Gator Chomp. I loved it. I know you loved it. Talk to me about the Gator Chomp.
Well, let me ask Rick Barnes this. And if he's listening to this podcast, he can feel free to tweet me at @Aaron_Torres or give me a buzz or whatever. I think that Gator Chomp brought a lot more, eyballs to the win than it would have if they had just won 78-67 or whatever they won. Rick Barnes, those guys did you a favor. Everybody's talking Tennessee Vols basketball today, where I don't know if they just get another quality win on the road on a weekend when Virginia won on the road and Duke won on the road and Gonzaga won on the road. I don't know. We're talking about Tennessee Vols basketball right now. So I loved it. What I loved mostly was that it was – I loved – you know, and this is one of the things I love about college basketball is kind of seeing a team's personality come out over the course of a season. And, you know, Tennessee last year, they were kind of like the plucky underdog. And I know that I'm as guilty as anybody of saying, well, can they really replicate it? It doesn't look like they have any NBA guys on this roster. And obviously Schofield and Williams are going to get some buzz now that they're playing well again. But, like, I was like, you know, what is really the ceiling for this team? And so to see them not only continue to win, but kind of get this attitude, kind of get this swagger to them, like, we not only won, we not only came into your place and took your best shot, but now we're running over to your student section and letting you know about it. I love that. And I love the fact that this team is gaining confidence, that their personality is coming out. Because, like, Rob, you know this, but, like, this is not a group of guys that collectively, you know, would generally do something like this. Like, Grant Williams' mom works for NASA. Like, these guys are nerds. These guys are, like, dorks. Like, you know, I've read stories that, like, they play, like, you know, whatever not cool video game or card game on the road. Like, this is not, you know, the group of guys that would normally do this. So I love it. And more importantly, I love kind of seeing the personality come out, but also evolve, and just seeing those guys like, you know, that's like some old school, like, you know, college basketball stuff that we don't see anymore because teams don't stay together for that long. But that was one where it was like, we took your best shot and we are going to enjoy this victory. Gator chomp. I loved it, man.
Yeah, I loved it too. And I think, honestly, look, Rick Barnes has to come out and say that it wasn't good and wasn't right. Yep, and sportsmanship, blah, blah, blah. Like, you kind of have to do that. But I think deep down he probably loved it, because it just, when you have a team that isn't afraid to kind of say, oh, F me, no, F you. Yep. After a win like that, and to go in and get a road win and then let them all know about it. Like, it takes a certain amount of mental toughness and a certain amount of balls and a certain amount of confidence that doesn't go beyond the point of cockiness. You got to have something like that to be able to not only win that game, but then to go over there and talk to them and let them know about it. And I loved it, man. And look, I am always, always going to err on the side of saying that talking shit is a good thing in sports. I love it. Yeah. I want celebrations in NFL games. I want NBA players to be able to do those little 3-point celebrations. I love when I just love when, like, trash talk, and not just the trash talk, the bragging. What do you call them when they throw the 15-yard flag? Taunting. I love taunting. I'm pro taunting. All I want is more and more taunting. And this was the best kind of taunting that I think you can get in the SEC. You just won in the, people don't go into the O-Dome and get wins. And Tennessee went in there, got a win, and then did the gator jump in front of the student section. I loved it. It was awesome. Best thing I saw this weekend.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it was a hard fought win too. Like, I was watching that game, and like, Florida, as we all know, is like a really good defensive team, and really actually did a good job of getting Tennessee out of their rhythm and out of their comfort zone. I think for people who didn't only saw the final score, that was a game that was very much in doubt until the final 2 or 3 minutes. And so, like, you know, this was kind of my point that I made on it when I've talked about it and tweeted about it, whatever, is like, you know, it reminds me a lot of the Baker Mayfield planting the flag at Ohio State last year. Is like, you know, it's one thing, like, if you win by 40 and, you know, you're just embarrassing people. But when you're playing, and Rob, we've all played sports at some level, like, when you're playing balls to the wall for 40 minutes in basketball or 60 minutes in football, you're taking the other team's best shot. Your adrenaline is rushing. You're getting elbowed in the ribs, and you still figure out a way on the road to get a victory. You got to let out that emotion somehow, man. And like, if that's the way Tennessee is going to do it, I love it, because I think that's a variable of it too, is like, it was a real emotional game. And if we're being honest, they were just letting emotion out. I loved everything about it, I guess, is the point I'm trying to make.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about Ole Miss. Where do you stand on them? How much have you watched them? And how come, for somebody that is as pro-SEC as you are, I haven't seen you tweeting about them yet?
What? I've actually had two very positive tweets about them. No.
Okay, let me rephrase that. I didn't see you tweeting about them before they went into Auburn and you know, kicked the shit out of Auburn. No.
Well, 1,000% I didn't, because I didn't think they were very good. I mean,
both of us fall in that boat.
Well, you know, and it's amazing, because as we're recording right now here on Monday, there's only three teams in the SEC that have a 3-0 record. It's Tennessee, who's awesome, obviously. It's South Carolina, who came into SEC play. I think they were the only team in the SEC with a losing record coming into conference play. And it's Ole Miss. And like, yeah, like, I'd be lying if I said I know everything about their depth chart and what is going into this win, this success, because if you looked at their body of work in the out of conference, you know, they beat Baylor early, but that was their only win against the Power Five program. They lost to Butler. They lost to Cincinnati, who obviously not Power Five, but like, you know, they're, you know, good programs, good conferences, whatever. So like, no one saw this coming. And for them to, with basically the same roster, and this is what always amazes me. It's one thing when John Calipari rolls in and, you know, he brings in, you know, John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins or whatever. It's another thing with literally the exact same roster, a couple guys that were like fringe top 150 recruits, and he's winning. I don't get it. I don't have the answer. I saw Bruce Pearl actually had a really interesting comment about them after Auburn won, and that's that, you know, or after that they beat Auburn, and that's that they're taking care of the ball. You know, they're not turning the ball over. They're just a really smart team. Like, whatever it is, shout out to Kermit Davis. I've said this now, and I stand by it. If he gets that team to the NCAA tournament, he's got to be National Coach of the Year, because no one saw this coming at all, picked to finish 14th, and like, there was no logical, like, there was nothing that led us to believe. It wasn't like, oh, if this guy makes a leap or if that freshman balls out. It was like, there was nothing that made us think this was coming.
Part of me wants to agree with that. Part of me thinks that this is as much a sign of the fact that Andy Kennedy had lost this roster. And I think we see this a lot, sure, a lot with coaches. Is, I mean, we're seeing it right now with UCLA and Steve Alford, is that sometimes you get to a point where the players don't want to hear you anymore. And maybe it's because you're a screamer and they've stopped being motivated and now they're just annoyed by what you say. Maybe it's because they don't trust what you're telling them. And so they're not going to run what he wants you to run. Maybe it's because they feel aggrieved by maybe the way that you were coaching or what you're running, and you know, they're not going to play hard for you anymore. And I don't know exactly what went on with AK in that program, but I do know that when he stepped down, part of the reason he did was because he said that he basically had lost the team and lost the locker room. So I don't wonder actually. I think that what he did was build a roster that was good enough to be better than what they were the last couple of years, but it needed new blood in the program. And that's not, you know, I'm not trying to take away from Kermit, what Kermit Davis is doing, because I mean, you have to go out and win those games, right? You have to be able to beat Auburn by 15, like he did. You have to be able to go into Starkville and beat Mississippi State, which he did. So credit to him for being able to get this roster to play the way that he has it playing. But I don't think that it's necessarily all that shocking that, you know, Brian Tyree is doing what he's doing and Terrence Davis is doing what he's doing. Actually, I remember talking with a member of the Ole Miss staff. I want to say it was 2 years ago. And he basically said, like, look, anybody that doesn't have Terrence Davis down as a top 75 player in America has no idea what they're talking about. And I specifically remember having that conversation. And, you know, I think Terrence Davis is making that guy look smart right now. By the way, I got to give a shout out to Gary Parrish of CBS Sports, because he said, Brian Tyree sounds like a character from Game of Thrones, and I can't stop laughing now every time I think about Brian Tyree's name.
I've never seen Game of Thrones, so I really don't know.
You've never seen Game of Thrones?
Yeah, I don't do Dungeons and Dragons stuff. Not my thing, and I don't think I ever will. So,
see, I thought the same thing, and then my wife decided that she really wanted to watch it, and I sat down and watched one episode, and thought it was okay. I thought I watched another episode and kind of got into it. And then you kind of get like hooked in, and they're very good at making sure that they draw you in and get you locked in. And, you know, you get a little bit invested in the storyline and invested in the characters. And I would recommend to you that you at least give it a try.
Okay. All right.
Look, I'll be honest with you. I've never seen like any of the Lord of the Rings things. Like I'm not into like the fantasy stuff. I hate all of like the comic book movies, like stuff that's not based in reality is not something I can get on board with. But like I watched like half of the first season. I was like, okay, let's do this. This is really good. And I binged everything last summer and got all caught up by like the fifth episode of the last season that they just aired.
Okay. I mean, a lot of people have told me that. I was like at a buddy's house and like, it was like a Sunday and he claimed that he had to watch it because everybody on Sundays goes crazy over it. And like, I did kind of catch it like middle of like a season. And I just, obviously mid season, like season three, there's no way you're going to get into it. But you know, like, I mean, I guess I'm willing. My problem is I have such bad ADD that I don't think like I'll be able to make it to like episode three or episode four. Like, I feel like if I'm not hooked in like the first 10 minutes, like give you an example, like binge the hell out of Narcos probably about a year ago. And like Narcos, within like the first 50 seconds of the first episode, you're like, oh, this shit's intense. And like, I don't know. I don't know if I have the attention span to wait till three, four episodes to get into it.
Well, it might be quicker than that for you. I just knew that I was like, okay, this is pretty good. And then by the third or fourth episode that I was like locked in, I was like, are we going to watch another one? It's 2 o'clock in the morning. Can we stay up? We can do this. So I would recommend doing it. I'm kind of the same way as you, though. You know, there's been a lot of shows that I've watched like three episodes of and then never watched it again because I was just kind of like, meh, whatever. Even like The Americans, like I never got more than like halfway through one season. And everybody raves about that. So I'm with you, man. I'm with you. But I do think you should give it a try. What were we talking about? Oh, yeah, Bree and Tyree. Let's move on. Let's talk about Villanova. Are they going to win the Big East again?
I mean, unless there's like a 10-way tie with everyone finishing at 9-9, it is unbelievable. Like, what I'm so amazed by is, like, the teams in the Big East, like, the ones that we thought were going to be good have been good. And there were ones that, like, didn't look good in the preseason that I had just kind of written off that all of a sudden, like, have life to them. And I know this probably isn't the best example because they've lost two games in a row. But, like, Creighton, I just basically wrote off after about, like, 8 to 10 games. And let's be honest, they should have beaten Marquette the other night. Marquette's probably the second-best team or the best team or the third-best team, wherever you want to put Marquette. They're really, really, really good. Creighton should have beaten them. And so to answer your question, like, I guess I like Villanova to win the Big East because I guess in theory somebody has to win it. But I'll also be honest in the sense that I really thought that there was a pretty bad bottom to this league. And, like, I thought Seton Hall might finish in 10th place, for example. And everybody is pretty good. Like DePaul's got a few wins. Xavier is 3-2 in the league, which I didn't see coming. I'll say this is, like, it does in a weird way remind me of the SEC last year. And, you know, I'm Mr. SEC guy, where every night it was competitive. I don't know that there was a national championship contender in the league last year in the SEC or this year in the Big East. I actually almost am certain that there isn't. But it does feel like that league in the sense that every single night you will at the very least be entertained.
I'm with you there. I think that Villanova is probably going to end up doing it just because I trust them at this point.
Sure.
I don't necessarily know that I trust Marquette. Although I will say this, I think that Marquette with Marcus Howard can like go out and literally beat anybody in the country. I could see them going out and beating Duke because you can't tell me that there's zero possibility that Marcus Howard could go score 40 points and a half or 53 points in a game again. He's unbelievable.
So real quick on that. First of all, shout out to you because you had Marquette in the Final Four in the preseason. Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if you eventually backed off that pick or not or, like, tempered it down or whatever.
I did not. I also, let's just say that when I think I was getting Marquette at plus 10,000 in October.
Okay.
Let's just say that there might be a little bit of money on the line for that one, too. So, Marquette fans, I'm with you. I'm riding with you.
Well, I'll say this. If you put down a dollar, there's some money on the line. I'm guessing you probably put down more than a dollar. So, I just had this conversation.
At plus 2,000, I didn't need to, or plus 10,000, I didn't need to put down too much more than a dollar, but I did put down more than a dollar.
I hope it hits for you because I think drinks will be on you after the Final Four if that hits. But we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But so, like, real quick with Marquette, I just literally had this conversation with somebody today. We were talking a little bit about Virginia, and like, I've been about as anti-Virginia as anybody, and I do also, like, agree that this year they do play differently. Their scoring is way up while their defense is the same. But I also, like, I reference with Virginia is, like, I still need to see them get into a game where they have to win 78-75 in the NCAA tournament. I need to see them win that game before I believe it. And so I know you're probably thinking, why the hell are you talking Virginia? It's because I use that exact example. I go, like, what if Virginia just gets Marquette in the second, in the Sweet 16 of the tournament, and Marcus Howard just, you know, he hits seven threes in the first half, which I know he's a second half player, but like he could hit seven threes in the first half and Virginia might, you know, they might give up 40 points in the first half. And so I only bring that up because I'm just kind of reaffirming the point that you made, which is like, we always do this time of year is like, who's the team that, you know, could make a run. And, you know, you never know until the brackets come out, but I totally agree that I think Marquette, because of the way they play, because of the way they shoot, and because of Marcus Howard, could beat anybody in college basketball. I don't know how many teams I really feel that way about.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. And to your point about Virginia, like I think that that kind of hammers home why evaluating a program on whether or not they can get to the Final Four is just kind of dumb and silly, right? Because so much of it is about how the bracket breaks down. So much of it is about who you end up playing. So much of it is about what those matchups are. Is somebody healthy for the game that you're playing? Did somebody, you know, tweak his ankle in the first half of the game that you lost? So
break your hand right before the tournament starts.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm kind of with you on that point. And yes, I will be very happy if Marquette makes a run. But back to one last point.
Me
on
too,
Villanova.
Because I'll get some free beers out of it.
Yeah, you will. You will. Beers, vodkas, whatever you want, man. Last point on Villanova. I think that the so they were 8-4 after eight and three after losing at home to Penn earlier this year when they went to Allen Fieldhouse. That was 6 games ago. In those 6 games, they have gone 5-1 as Phil Booth is averaging 22.7 points, 5.2 boards, and 5 assists while shooting better than 47% from three. At the same time, Eric Pascal is shooting is averaging 20.2 points, 8 boards. And shooting 47% from three. So the difference to me between Villanova now and what they were earlier in the season is Phil Booth and Eric Pascal are finally playing like the guys that we thought they were going to be all year long.
I agree 100%. And it's why, even though they lost 4 guys that ended up being amongst the top 33 picks in the NBA draft, like there was a reason that every single person who covers college basketball still thought they would be a top 10 team coming into this season. I think every top 25 I saw coming into the season had them in the top 10. And it was because of those 2 guys. Obviously, they struggled a little bit to start the season. They were inconsistent. There were some other issues, too, with depth and other guys not kind of emerging or evolving the way that they were expected to in the offseason. But, you know, there's not too much of a point to kind of hammer home here, but it's exactly right. Like, there's a reason that we all thought they were a top 10 team, and it was those 2 guys, and those 2 guys are starting to play to their capabilities right now.
All right, so let's just jump around really quick. I'm going to have 3 topics for you. Give me a minute on each one. Gonzaga at San Francisco. Gonzaga ended up winning. That was one of the more entertaining games of the weekend. Is that the last time that Gonzaga is going to lose before the NCAA tournament?
Well, they didn't lose, though. I mean
is that the last game that they have a chance to lose? Sorry, I phrased that bad.
Yeah, it's okay. I just want to make sure. I was like, I mean, I don't know. I know you needed like a definitive answer. We got to get going here. It's lightning round. Like, Gonzaga is so good, and I actually think they're right in that upper tier. And I, you know, right now they're behind some teams in the polls, but I think when it matters, they're as good as anybody. That conference is like way better than it's been. And so I guess in theory, yeah, I could see them losing a game, but it's hard for me to find it on the schedule. I'll say Gonzaga takes one more loss before the tournament. It does kind of remind me of like Nevada a few weeks ago, though. Like, none of us were like actually thinking they were going to finish the regular season undefeated, but it was hard to find that loss on the schedule. I'll say Gonzaga does take one more loss. I just can't say right now at this moment to who it might be to.
And I want to give a shout out to Kyle Smith and San Francisco. That is a really, really good basketball team. They got a point guard by the name of Frankie Ferrari. I swear that is his actual real name. Kyle Smith is a disciple of Randy Bennett. And you can really see it with the way that they kind of run their offense. Remember those old St. Mary's teams where they would just have really super efficient big guys and put their point guards, whether it was like Patty Mills or Mickey McConnell or whoever it was, just in ball screen after ball screen after ball screen. That's what they do with Frankie Ferrari. It's fun to watch. They are a top 50 team on KenPom. I am of the opinion that they should get a bid to the NCAA tournament if they don't end up winning the automatic bid, and even if they don't end up winning at Gonzaga. There's a bunch of mid-major teams, whether it's Wofford or Furman or Murray State or Lipscomb, or, you know, I'm probably missing some and I don't want those coaches
Buffalo's
to yell at me.
Obvious one,
Buffalo,
yeah.
Yes. You know, East Tennessee State. There's a bunch of really, really good mid-major teams out there that may not have the resume. And with the Pac-12 what it is this year, and the American what it is this year, and the Atlantic 10 what it is this year, I really, really hope that the committee keeps going out and watching these teams and saying, look, they may not have the resume necessarily, but this is a team that is good enough to be one of the top 68 teams in all of college basketball. And I'm going to keep driving this point home. I went on a rant earlier this year that we need to talk about the mid-majors more often and talk about them as NCAA tournament teams. Murray State is a tournament team. I'll say that definitively. Wofford is a tournament team. Furman is a tournament team. San Francisco is a tournament team. So I want to see them in the big dance. I hope the committee listens to me.
And I'll jump in on that really quick. I really hope that ends up happening, because I already see like the sands of the argument starting to shift, where I think like a month ago, everyone was in agreement. There are a lot of really bad teams in these power conferences. But now, like just an example, like with the Big East, everyone's like, whoa, look how competitive it is night in and night out. And like, I do agree it is very competitive. And I do agree that there are some teams, like I said, like Seton Hall, who have exceeded expectations. But I also hope that you know, one of the teams that maybe didn't perform as well in the out of conference doesn't end up bolstering its resume by, you know, going 9-9 or something like that. And I'm just pulling numbers out of a hat here. But like, you know, Texas got into the NCAA tournament. I think they were 17-13 last year. And so I can already see kind of the conversation starting to shift. And you're absolutely right. A team like San Francisco, they're awesome. By the way, I don't know if you picked up this nugget during the San Francisco Gonzaga game, which I did not know, but Frankie Ferrari actually used to be an Uber driver, which is mind-boggling to me.
Oh, that is too perfect.
Use that one.
That's
yeah,
too perfect.
Use that one. But your point on mid-major stands. I hope we get more of those programs in this tournament. It was funny, real quick, I had like Eric Musselman on my podcast probably about a month ago, and like we were talking about, I understand we all want the brands in the tournament, but we also remember the Loyola Chicago's, the Nevada's, the runs that they make. And like, I speak for America when I say, like, we don't need 17-13 Texas in the tournament just because they're a brand name. I hope programs like that do get in, because they're the ones that provide the memories that we all remember about the tournament.
And for anybody listening to this right now, I'm going to keep beating that drum all year. So if you're sick of it, I need you to change your mind and hop on this bandwagon with me. Two more things. Okay, Maryland, are they the second best team? Are they the third best team in the Big Ten right now behind the two Michigan teams? Wow, I butchered that question. Let me try it over. Maryland, are they the third best team in the Big Ten behind the two Michigan teams? See, there you go.
That was wonderful. Great job. So I was blown away by how well they played against Indiana the other night, and they fell down early and they bounced back. I need to see a little bit more from them specifically on the road before I crown them anything. I mean, I they're 5-1 in league play, but they lost at Purdue earlier in the year. They won at Rutgers, at Minnesota. Minnesota's a nice win, but obviously we're not talking about the top tier of that league. So, look, I think you can make a case for Indiana, maybe one or two other teams. Ohio State seems to have flatlined here a little bit, but I think they're the third best team in that league, at least right now, this second, but I need to see a little bit more specifically away from home.
Yeah, I think I agree with you on that one. There's eight teams in the Big Ten that could all have an argument to be the third best. And it's just going to be, like you said, like you mentioned with the Big East, it's just going to be a jumbled mess of trying to figure out which 11-7 or 12-6 team is actually good at the end of the year. So the last thing, Iowa State, they went out. They beat Kansas at home by 17 points. I declared them a top 10 team. I went all in.
comparing them to Nova. They're Nova.
I said that they're not as good as Nova, but they're built the same way. And the Doster curse struck again. They are 0-2 since I declared them a top 10 team. Was this my fault?
I mean, it's definitely not your fault, if that makes sense. You played a role. Look, I'll be honest. First of all, two losses are by a combined 4 points. But I watched like that Kansas State game, and I was flipping between all the games, so I don't want to sit here and say definitively, like, I don't know how they lost the Kansas State game. Like, they were up the entire game. And they were up, like, I don't even know, like 4 points was something to go. I don't even know. But to answer your question, I think you're like 40% to blame. I also just think this is the stuff that happens in college basketball. I would add, too, I think it also shows how tough it is to be a Kansas, Kentucky, a Duke, a Gonzaga. When you get everybody's best shot every single night, Kansas got the absolute best version of Iowa State, when they played them. And that, it just amazes me how these teams continue to win conference titles year in and year out, knowing that they get everybody's best shot. I think the Iowa State thing is actually a really good example of that.
I would just like to apologize to Steve Prohm. I would like to apologize to Tyrese Halliburton and Lindell Wigginton and everybody on that Iowa State roster and all those Cyclone fans that started following me on Twitter after I said that they were a top 10 team. Please don't leave me. I'm still your friend. I still like you guys. And I'll promise, I'll start saying that you're terrible so maybe you can get good again.
Yeah, so it sounds like you feel responsibility.
I do.
In which case, I'm glad you're admitting to it.
I feel guilty. All right, man, listen, I've kept you long enough. I said it was going to be 45 minutes. It ended up being an hour. I appreciate your time. Anybody out there, tell them where to find your podcast. It's Aaron Torres Sports Podcast in iTunes or Stitcher or whatever it is.
Yep. Yeah, no, exactly. Aaron Torres Sports Podcast. Same kind of conversations going on. You know, I'll dip my toe into football here and there. But, yeah, hoops heavy. And I host Fox Sports Radio every Saturday night, get to recap everything that happened on Saturday. That's a really fun gig as well. Best place to find everything on Twitter at Aaron_Torres.
Listen, man, I appreciate your time. Thanks for hopping on.
Anytime, Neva Rob. Thank you, man.
Thanks for listening. Follow me on Twitter.
Give me 5 stars.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. Like that car riding in your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.